Reproductive freedom is the issue that most indicates an entire worldview. Pro-environment, pro-health, pro-education. Reproductive freedom itself is a fundamental human right, like freedom of speech.
That's feminist leader Gloria Steinem. She was appearing yesterday also on the dais at the March for Women's Lives. We're getting your reaction to it, as well as hearing from some of the best guests here on Issues Etc. Live this Monday. It's the 26th of April. 26th of April. Hearing from our best guests in their reaction as well. During this hour, we'll hear from Marianne Hackett from Illinois Right to Life, and a little bit later, Carolyn Gralia, author of the book Domestic Tranquility, A Brief Against Feminism. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Vicki's up calling from her car. Vicki, welcome to Issues Etc.
Pastor?
Yes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let you know that this is a passion of mine and always has been. I feel very sad for what women go through, and I myself have given a child up for adoption when I was 17 years old. I gave a child up for adoption, and that's what I chose because I just knew there was no other way. I went through Birthright, and they helped me out tremendously. And one of my counselors there told me a bit of advice that I'm thankful for to this day, is that circumstances always change.
What did that mean? What does that come to mean to you over time, especially reflecting upon giving up a child for adoption?
Well, it meant to me that I am not going to think of abortion always. I am not going to think of suicide always. I am not going to think of, you know, I mean, it's not always going to be there in my mind. Some things will pass, and which it did, because I did think about it, but I knew that there was no absolute way that I could do it because I was raised Catholic.
Vicki, thank you very much for the call, and thank you for making the right choice there when the choice came up. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Joining us from Illinois Right to Life is Marianne Hackett. She's a regular guest on Issues Etc. Her reaction as well to yesterday's March for Women's Lives. Marianne, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much.
Give us your general reaction.
Well, I think the typically we have the numbers and they have the media, and the media has hyped this march. Remarkably, the papers and so forth are reporting large numbers. It's always a numbers game. But the fact of the matter is the Life News, InfoNet, has reported there were only about 250 people there in the march, which is a large march. But the papers are reporting 800,000, 500,000. And the sad thing about it is it's a death march. They're marching for death, to keep the killing of children legal. And how do you explain that? How do you justify that? I think it's a tragedy for women. In fact, there were many women in the Silence No More campaign that were at the march giving a counter witness.
Marianne, I want to talk because I am a resident of Illinois. I know that you are, of course, as well. About Illinois as a state in particular that has a rather abysmal record when it comes to the issues of life, when it comes to the issues of protecting the unborn and women,
right,
who are being fed this kind of rhetoric,
right,
not
right,
only on Sundays during a march, but year-round.
That's right. And I think we've become a dumping ground for young women who don't want to get their parents' consent or notification. And so they come to Illinois because we have no laws. We've tried innumerable times to get a women's right to know bill through. It never will even get out of committee. We've tried in every way we can to protect women. We've tried to get a task force in the legislature to study the issue of abortion and cancer. We couldn't get that through. We haven't been successful in protecting women or unborn babies in this state. And it's surprising to me because I think Illinois early on was a state that was considered very pro-life. It was almost simple to get through legislation until about the time of the Missouri ruling and then following Casey. And I think what happened is the people who voted routinely pro-life thought now it could really happen. It could really be outlawed. And so they started changing their vote to their true colors.
And what does it make you think, and how do you respond when you hear, as you might have informally at the march in Washington, D.C. yesterday, when you hear a pro-choice advocate talk about Illinois as a bright beacon of hope in the United States against states like Missouri that have oppressive laws that rob women of their natural rights?
Well, I think it's a cause for shame. I think we should be ashamed of our state, that it's a state that touts the killing of children and brags about the fact that we have no restrictions. I think that's a cause for shame, and I think in years to come, because public opinion is changing, I think in years to come, many, many people will be ashamed that our state was that state. We were very free in our judgment of Germany, and yet how are we any different? We know what's happening. We're not going to be put in camps if we stand up against it. And yet those people were and are subject to great criticism. I think our state is a shameful situation at this time.
How do you respond when you hear things like that were heard yesterday in Washington, D.C. at the March for Women's Lives, that that our government, talking on a national level, our government is oppressive of women, that there are people in our government who are trying to rob women and return women to the 19th century?
Well, all they have to do is look at how women are treated in the Middle East and know that our women are the most privileged group of women in the world. And I think another interesting thing about that march is they expected to have thousands of women eager to rave about their right to abortion. However, they had to recruit the anti-war protesters, they had to recruit the gay community, they had to recruit all sorts of peace people and green people, because they were not able to get women to go out and march for death. That isn't in the nature of women.
I'd like your reaction also to Linda Harrison. She's president of Missouri National Organization for Women. She's quoted in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as saying that Roe v. Wade, 30 years ago, to legalize most abortion, now hangs in the balance.
If only that were so true. But I think we are beginning to see the signs of victory. I think certainly the medical and scientific information is on our side. No one can look at the baby in the womb on 3D ultrasound and say it's a blob of tissue. It's very little different from the baby you hold in your lap. I think the fact of the matter is Roe v. Wade is in the balance because it could be turned down. That is why they're so eager to stop the judges from being approved, the judges that have been nominated by President Bush. And now Daschle says he'll hold up every judge until Bush relinquishes his right to make recess appointments. That's the right of any president. And I think they're beginning to be panicky and horrified at the thought. And they'll do anything. They'll stoop to anything. They'll use any tactic to stop a change in the courts. And I think it's obvious that they're in a state of panic.
Mary Ann Hackett, thank you very much for being our guest, and thanks for your thoughts and your reactions to the March for Women's Lives on Sunday.
Thank you for having me on.
Mary Ann Hackett is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. Illinois Right to Life. It's open lines for the next 15 minutes or so. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Then we'll be talking with Carolyn Gralia, author of the book Domestic Tranquility, A Brief Against Feminism. All the old, please take this term advisedly, but all the old war horses were there yesterday, weren't they? And they were in memory as well, those that have passed on. This was a march that was done in their memory of all the feminist leaders. Feminism now, we heard that quote from Gloria Steinem. She says, reproductive choice is a worldview that encompasses all these other things, all these other things. It's the broad worldview. What do you make of that? If you're pro-life and you're told the best possible worldview to hold, she put it in terms of a worldview, is reproductive choice. It encompasses everything that's out there, all of these causes that you saw in evidence in Washington, D.C. yesterday. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your reaction to the March for Women's Lives. What about the name of the event, the March for Women's Lives? Another nice euphemism, don't you think? Does it include women in the womb, by the way? That's what I wanted to know. Are they marching for the women in the womb, or the only ones that make it out safely? Apparently only the ones that are lucky enough to make it out safely. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go back to the phones, talk with Brandy. She's calling from her car. Hi, Brandy.
Hi.
Hi, Brandy.
Oh, I think I just cut out.
Brandy, what's your question, Brandy?
Actually, I just had a comment.
Sure.
I don't agree with the women saying that they were marching for women's lives. They weren't marching for me. They weren't representing me. I got pregnant when I was 17, and I chose not to have an abortion. And I have a 2.5-year-old son at home who is wonderful, and I am 9 months pregnant now, and I don't see how they can call what I have inside me not a living human. I go every week to the doctor, and I see his heartbeat. I see the blood flow to his brain, and it just makes me sick that they can say he's not living.
Brandy, thank you very much. Thank you. I didn't even hear it brought up. I did not hear the baby brought up during the March for Women's Lives. I didn't hear the what's in the womb brought up. I didn't make her no arguments made that because Brandy says, I can't believe that they say that it's not a living human being. I didn't hear them say anything about it. It was a march in favor of aborting babies that the one conspicuously absent fact was the one who is most affected by the act of abortion. The one who doesn't make it out of the abortion alive was not mentioned. Now, honesty would call for you to at least deal with that fact. I mean, at least come up with an argument. Tell me it's a blob of tissue. Tell me that it's not a human being, that it's a fetal chicken. Tell me something. They didn't say anything. Perhaps they've learned that they don't need to make those arguments. Perhaps they've learned that making those arguments don't get them any place. Or, and I think this is more likely, what do you think? They've learned that the sloganeering pays off. That if you avoid the facts, the real issue here, who's in the womb, if you avoid it long enough, you don't ever have to talk about it. Because women and men who hear the rhetoric lose the ability to think critically about this issue. They hear, know your power and use it. They hear, keep your hands off of our body. There are no arguments there. Those are just slogans. You realize that, don't you? They hear about a war against women. They hear about long right arms of John Ashcroft reaching out, grasping for uteruses. They hear about all these. You hear these things. There are no arguments being made here. And I think they're, in a very wicked way, quite brilliant. They don't make arguments because they know they don't have to. Even if they did, most people probably wouldn't want to deal with them. They'd tune out. They're dealing with facts. I don't want to deal with facts. Give me something that I can believe without thinking. Maybe they've learned that the American public has become so dumbed down that no arguments need to be made that the baby isn't a baby. We don't even need to mention it. You don't have to construct a public argument here. You don't have to say, all right, in order to advocate this action, abortion, we do have to answer our critics who say that abortion stops a beating heart. Brandy mentioned this, seeing the heartbeat. I saw the same thing with both of my children. Saw it before they were ever born through the ultrasound. You see the heartbeat. At first, it was just a flickering pixel on the screen. Couldn't even discern any other part of the baby at that time, except the beating heart. And after some real careful maneuvering, the technician there in the sonogram room was able to let us hear that heartbeat, too. A special microphone that picks it up, a faint little sound from within the mother's womb. Now, there's a fact. That's a pretty clinical situation. I mean, in any other circumstances, if a doctor were using an ultrasound to look around inside your body and came across a beating heart that wasn't the beating heart of your beating heart, he might say, what is this? This requires some investigation. If he listened in with his stethoscope or more advanced instruments and he heard the little lub-dub, the little thump, thump, thump of a beating heart, he might say, something's going on here. This is odd. If you watched the March for Women's Lives yesterday, apparently that's not necessary. You hear a heartbeat in there? That's not necessary. That's something we need to dispose of. We're not going to tell you what that thing is, that something. We don't even need to tell you. Just keep your hands off our uteruses. Just stop your governmental oppression. Just stop trying to ruin women's lives by making them have the babies they conceive, by their own choice, by the way. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We had a caller in the last hour talked about Roe v. Wade being bad law from a religious perspective. You cannot justify abortion, and even in terms of the medicine, that's what I've been talking about here, it can't be justified. So how do you explain? Let's give the Associated Press the benefit of the doubt. Let's give the marchers yesterday and their leaders yesterday the benefit of the doubt and say that this was the largest march ever for reproductive rights. One of them even said the largest march, not only in reproductive rights history, women's rights history, but the largest march in history, period. One even said the largest march in the universe. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. How do you explain that? When you don't hear arguments being made and you do not hear anything being mentioned about the one who doesn't make it out of the abortion alive. How do they draw that many people? Selena is calling from her car. Hi, Selena.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
That's good. I'm a little confused. Who has touched their uterus more, the person doing the abortion or the person who wants not to do an abortion?
It's true.
That confuses me a little bit.
Thank you.
Just an observation to let you to kind of talk about.
Thank you, Selena. She's kind of picking up on something I said near the end of the last hour. And we heard it several times. We heard it again a little bit later in the program from the marchers and the leaders at the March for Women's Lives, talking about, you know, keeping your hands off our uteruses, lock boxes on our uteruses, keeping your hands off the lock box of our uterus. Apparently, they don't mind everyone. They don't mind the abortionist touching the uterus, dealing with the uterus. I mean, this is their term. This isn't mine. I'm not introducing this subject. We need to listen carefully through the mantras and the rhetoric and the chanting and the sloganeering and the demagoguery and the fear-mongering and the false dichotomies and hear what it is they are asking for, not just what they're warning against. They're warning against, in their minds, an oppressive government that would put its hands all over their uteruses, and yet, in the same way, they are inviting women to let nameless, faceless abortionists who have nothing more in common with them and no more care for them that whether or not their check will clear. Not only put their hands on their bodies, keep your hands off my body, they invite the abortionist. No, put your hands on my body. They're inviting women to do the same. I was also a little bit interested, actually very interested. I was very interested in the fact that when it appeared that the turnout for this, and we mentioned this with Marianne Hackett just a few minutes ago, when it appeared that the turnout for this was going to be less than would look good on the news, less than would look good if reported by the Associated Press as, you know, 250,000 as opposed to close to a million. There are lots of claims of a million there. Boom. No one was counting. I mean, you can't count the crowd that quickly. Even the Park Service they don't even take estimates of Washington, D.C. anymore because it's impossible to estimate it accurately. The police can say, well, you know, we can guess. But they were already claiming a million people there. I mean, I could just as well say I got a million people in this studio right now. Who's to argue with me? There are a million people in here. The silent majority. They're all standing by. Got a million. I could say I have a million listeners. I have a million listeners. I could make that claim, couldn't I? Someone would eventually hold me accountable for it, wouldn't they? I mean, you'd think. But in order to get whatever number they got, they had to invite essentially everybody else. Reminds me a little bit of, someone who throws a birthday party and can't get anyone to come. Okay, now start inviting the cousins. Get somebody to fill up the place. But they did fill up the place. How do you account for that? How do you explain it? Those of you who are pro-life. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I've listened to a lot of the rhetoric that came out of that march yesterday. And the one little bite that chills me the most, I didn't initially think was very interesting. It was near the beginning where one of the speakers said, "Know your power," or maybe she said, "Know your strength." It doesn't make any difference one way or the other. Know your power, know your strength, and use it. Know your strength and use it. You know, this really is about strength versus weakness. It is. What you may have witnessed, read about in the paper this morning, or heard a soundbite from on the radio today, or seen a little bit on the news last night, or heard someone else talk about today, this March for Women's Lives, it really was about strength versus weakness. Now, not the strength of the numbers of the people there. That's interesting. But it's not necessarily relevant. The argument that was being made yesterday, if we strip away the euphemisms, the sloganeering, the demagoguery, the fear-mongering, the false dichotomies, the anger, and just deal with the cold, hard facts, is this. I'm a woman. I'm strong. The baby is weak. And I should have the right to exercise my strength, to use my strength against the baby. Baby can't fight back. Completely and utterly helpless. If I can't do it myself, I'll get an abortionist to help me do it too. Then it's two against one. And if I feel a little guilty about that, I might become an activist. And I might invite lots of people to join me. I can get 1,000 people in my hometown, and then we can go and march on Washington with a bunch of other people from a bunch of other hometowns, and we can all add up to 500 to 800,000 people. Then it's 500 to 800,000 people against one. One baby. Because abortions, by the way, happen one at a time, don't they? The women and the men who spoke there yesterday, who marched there yesterday, were saying, in essence, we are strong, the baby is weak. We are 800,000 strong, that baby is just one against all of us. That baby's weak, that baby can't fight back. I don't know why they feel like they have to have such numbers, because apparently, at least according to the rhetoric, the woman is already strong enough to deal with the baby on her own. And the baby can't fight back. Think about those words. Know your strength and use it, especially when you know what's being called for there. When we come back, we'll hear from St. Louis Post-Dispatch columnist Amy White. Stay with us.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc. Why do you go to church? To thank and praise God? To get some spiritual motivation for a weary work week? To obey God's command, remember the Sabbath day. But is worship primarily about what we do, or is it about God's service to us? Worship is the subject of our Issues Etc. book of the month for April. They Will See His Face. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. They Will See His Face costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040. You can also order this book online at issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. They Will See His Face is a must-read for the worship wards. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. They Will See His Face, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. It looks like a David versus Goliath kind of battle. Longtime Senator Arlen Specter is facing Pat Toomey, a relative unknown, in the Republican primary tomorrow. But the race is too close to call. Why is this even a contest? Stuart Shepard says the answer is abortion.
24-year incumbent Senator Arlen Specter has been relentlessly pounding Pat Toomey with negative ads.
An out-of-control bar owner who flip-flops on abortion, depending on the election.
But the ads are having little effect. Maria Vital is with the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation.
Congressman Pat Toomey in the last Congress had a 100% pro-life voting record.
She says although Specter is a Republican, he generally votes pro-abortion.
Senator Specter has the number of key votes against life.
Specter's staff did not respond to my request for an interview, but Toomey's press secretary Joe Stearns did.
He should win because he's a far better representative of the values that are at the heart of the Republican Party platform. Lower taxes, efficient government, personal freedom, and traditional family values respecting the sanctity of human life.
Michael Geer with the Pennsylvania Family Institute points out that Specter's long tenure presents another key element.
His incumbency would put him in line to be the next chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Every nominee to the federal bench must first pass through that committee.
His historic role on that committee has been one that, I guess, social conservatives would say is mixed.
The power of the chairmanship especially comes to bear if a justice steps down from the Supreme Court. Specter once voted against pro-life nominee Robert Bork. For Family News in Focus, I'm Stuart Shepard.
Many pro-lifers believe Judge Bork would have brought an important pro-life voice to the court. For Specter to take the chair of the Judiciary Committee, the Republicans would also have to maintain control of the Senate, where they hold a one-vote majority. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
You want to give a gift to AM850 KFUO? Great! We've made it very easy. Just visit our website at kfuo.org. Click the support button on the left of the page, complete the form, and click submit. You can make a one-time single gift or a monthly gift using the KFUO website. So visit our website today at kfuo.org, and thank you for supporting AM850 KFUO.
Hi, this is Paul Clayton. I bring you news and information, inspirational Christian favorites, and conversations with great guests Monday through Friday on The Morning Show on AM850 KFUO. Plus, short features like, By the Way, our thought for the day from the Reverend Paul Devanteer, Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mance Simon, commentary from Dr. Dale Meyer, it's the Meyer Minute, plus Your Creation Moment. Features on The Morning Show on AM850 KFUO.
How does worship heal anxiety, guilt, loneliness, and grief? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April deals with worship and healing. It's titled, They Will See His Face. You can find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The cost is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. The title of the book, They Will See His Face.
At a time when we are sending our young men and women to a foreign country to fight and die for self-determination, we are here today to say that we demand that right also to self-determine here, as well as for the women in foreign countries.
That's Susan Sarandon at the March for Women's Lives yesterday on the Mall of Washington, D.C., one of the celebrity speakers on the dais during that long pro-choice march. Joining us now to get her reaction to this march and to the issues that were raised there, Amy White. She's a speechwriter and a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and a regular guest here on Issues Etc. We've come to value her thoughts on the program. Amy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you, Todd, very much.
I'd like to your reaction to that was just one bit of what was said there at the March for Women's Life. Your reaction to that cut from Susan Sarandon?
Well, it's just fascinating to me. Susan Sarandon has not really offered any support to the defense of freedom in Iraq, and yet she chooses to resurrect this as some kind of strange defense of the right to choose. It's a very convoluted argument and one that I think underscores her own hypocrisy.
What do you make of the fact that not only to bring out the numbers, but also in order to, I think, kind of muddy the waters, this march became about all sorts of different things, about George Bush, John Ashcroft, the war against terror, Iraq, just about everything, and it was all tied in some way to a woman's right to choose.
That's right, and I was struck by the political overtones. I mean, we frequently hear how, what an evil it would be to politicize the abortion issue, and yet it appears that the pro-choice movement had no choice but to make this a political issue to turn out additional numbers. All the polling data, Todd, as you well know, currently shows that a slim majority of Americans now believe abortion is wrong.
What's at stake here? I mean, when you hear about this, read about this March for Women's Lives, what does it tell you?
Well, what it tells me is that the pro-choice movement, after years of feeling that the Roe v. Wade decision was a decided one, sees that the conscience of America is finally beginning to realize what an offense, a deep offense, this is to our country and also to our God. And I was struck how repeatedly the comments that were used in the national media from the organizers of the event kept talking about health. They claimed this march is about reproductive health. Everyone thinks we're pro-abortion. I don't know anyone marching who's pro-abortion. What a ridiculous position to say we're against this, we're against abortion, we think it's a miserable, rotten thing, but by goodness, we want to be able to do it. I mean, it's the most convoluted argument, and to continue to stress health issues when the abortion procedure not only destroys the health of an unborn baby, but is very, very disruptive to the health of a woman.
Amy, you're a corporate speechwriter and also a columnist. You are schooled and skilled in the power of human language. Why the euphemisms, the sloganeering, the demagoguery, all of these rhetorical devices yesterday in Washington, D.C.?
Well, these devices show the poverty of the actual argument that they're trying to advocate. And all of these smoke screens, as you referred to it, are just that. They are trying to make this choice about freedom, and they completely neglect the freedom, the constitutional rights, the health issues concerning the unborn child. We live in an age where, independent of your feelings about birth control, there are a lot of resources to prevent pregnancy. And it's very artificial for women to insist that abortion is the equivalent of women having the choice whether or not to rear children. It's really an offensive, illogical, ill-conceived argument, and I'm disappointed it's taken so many decades for the American public to really open their eyes to it, but I'm greatly relieved that all the signs are that we clearly are beginning to come around through the constant advocacy of many Christians and people in the pro-life movement to see what this is really about.
Why the anger, the strident tone, the shouting, speaker after speaker, just almost from the inception, their introductions, yelling? They didn't need to yell. They had a perfectly good system of amplification.
Well, I think it really goes to show sort of the anger and the ugliness of the emotions that are at the heart of this debate. Because what these women are really yelling about is their demand to do what they want to do, independent of it costing an unborn child their life, independent of the regular means of preventing pregnancy, including abstinence, which is the only surefire and most respected tradition of avoiding pregnancy possible. This is really at its core an ugly selfishness, and the women are screaming about it because I think abortion is very tied into their feelings of wanting to declare independence from all things that they think would hold them down.
So why is it that, and this is something that I have wondered about for years now as I talk with people about the issue of abortion and about feminism, why is it that abortion has become, they said, we want to make abortion and women's reproductive rights the third rail of politics in America. That's one of the quotes from yesterday. And they're basically saying we want to make it an untouchable subject that cannot be contravened in any way whatsoever. Why is it so essential to this movement?
I think it's so essential, Todd, because they are depending on their ability to define life, to define freedom as the underpinnings of this. And it's really a power grab. These women are seeking to redefine some of our most cherished traditions, and abortion is one of the biggest examples of how they want to redefine the true essence of a woman, the true essence of child rearing, what a life is all about. And this is only beginning. This political framework of believing it's all about me and my right to autonomy, and no one can inflict anything on me, even if a pregnancy is a result of my free will and free choice. These things are dribbling and have tainted into all kinds of different areas of American society. But down at its core, America is beginning to see what this is really about. And the Wall Street Journal has discussed repeatedly something that they refer to as the Roe effect, which means that since Roe v. Wade made legalized abortion on demand possible, more children have been born to more women who value life in the womb than the women who do not value it and have had their children aborted. So eventually, decade by decade, the number of children born to women who valued that life in the womb is going to outnumber these pro-abortion forces. And it will be a happy day when we see this overturned.
The speakers at yesterday's march were never hesitant to mention the young women who were there. They sometimes even address some of their comments to the young women and young people in the audience. Does the March for Women's Lives yesterday in Washington, D.C. tell us where young women in America are on the issue of abortion?
It absolutely does not. In fact, poll results, and we're not speaking about poll results that are just done by organizations trying to prove a political point. Generalized Gallup polls show that the youth of America is even more radically pro-life than their pro-life parents. So really, the young people in America are a significant reason why public opinion has shifted. We see a higher level of activism among our young people right now on this issue. And having so recently been in the womb, I think that their commitment to this issue is that much more moving. I also think that young people understand that through technology, through our window into the womb, we can no longer deny the life that comes about from conception. These people, these young people, are far too technologically savvy to buy into this idea that there isn't life present.
Amy White, thank you again for your time and your thoughts on this day.
Thank you, Todd.
Amy White is a corporate speechwriter and a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. By the way, folks, at the end of this hour, you'll hear again a montage of some of the speakers yesterday at the March for Women's Lives. Before we get there, let's talk with Carolyn Graglia. Carolyn left a promising legal career in 1959 to care for her family. She's author of the book, and we've talked to her many times about it. The book is called Domestic Tranquility, A Brief Against Feminism. Carolyn, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Very glad to be with you.
Carolyn, long years fighting the ideas of feminism. What do you think when you see, by estimates, 500,000 to 800,000 women and men on the Mall of Washington, D.C., holding up signs and placards for pretty much the preeminent feminist issue, abortion?
Well, I'm not surprised at all, because abortion, legal and socially accepted abortion, has always been the cornerstone of the feminist movement that was revived in the 1960s. And as polls show, as your last speaker said, polls are showing an increased opposition to abortion, particularly by young women. This fills the organized feminist movement with feelings of great dread. And so they will do everything they can to march and rally in order to convince society that women cannot be free and equal unless they have an unrestricted right to abortion.
There was a lot of demagoguery going on, but let's talk about what their, if you can put it this way, what was their positive message? What picture of a woman, and in particular of motherhood, was being advocated yesterday in the March for Women's Lives?
Well, it's a picture of women who do not value motherhood and who value their freedom, their hyper-individualism more than anything else. And so I think it is always sad for women as a group when you see these women marching, saying that the most important issue in their lives is the right to kill a fetus. I mean, it is such a vile picture of womanhood to see them do this.
We were talking earlier, and most of the ideas that I, bright ideas that I get about feminism, I get from you, Carolyn, to be quite honest. I want you to talk a little bit about after 30 years of feminism. Men seem to have gotten many of the things that they wanted, like sex on demand without consequences or no-fault divorce. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, that, there's no question about that. The feminist movement should be called something other than feminist, because it's helped men get the sex without responsibility that men will always seek to get if they're not controlled. It's enabled men to abandon their families, and it has so terribly hurt women who bought the message of the movement and decided that what they had to be was career women, and that it was more important to get themselves educated and into a professional career rather than marrying and having children. And now you have so many sad, heartbroken women who have successful careers but have never married, and it's now too late for them to have children. And this is one of the saddest things in our society today. And women in college, in response to surveys, will say that to them today, the most important thing is to find a loving partner in life. And yet the message of the feminist movement and the message that they will get from all their feminist professors in college is that the most important thing is to have a very successful career, and from that career, happiness will flow. And that's not true.
What did you make of the fact that there was a very obvious attempt to broaden the issue of abortion beyond women's rights? Several times it was said in the course of the speakers there, it's a human rights issue, it's an issue for men as well, and an international issue.
Right. Well, that's very important for them now. You know, so many of the successes that the, I would call them the radical left, has had, for example, the Lawrence decision by the Supreme Court that invalidated state laws criminalizing homosexual sodomy. Those opinions, those Supreme Court opinions, the majority opinions, relied on the international approach to things. And they even relied on decisions in other countries, which have been much more liberal than we have with respect to homosexual rights. So insofar as the feminist movement is a radical left movement, which it definitely is, they do want to have an international approach to the abortion issue, particularly when they're really scared now, because as the last commentator said, the polls are showing that more women than men are opposing abortion, and that more young people are opposing abortion. This is for those of us who are fighting against abortion, this has been the most encouraging factor in many years, is that young people today, particularly, it's not just young women, it's young women and men. They have surveys of those who are entering college showing that the majority of them are now pro-life. And when they speculate as to why this is, I think it's very clear that this is now a generation that knew they could have been easily aborted themselves. Many of them will say, we regard ourselves as abortion survivors. And this has made them turn away from analyzing the issue in terms of women's individual freedom and looking at who is suffering, and it's the children who are aborted, and they identify with them in a way that their mothers never did.
Has abortion on demand more than, well, actually, instead of all the other issues that feminism could latch onto and have latched onto in the past, has it become the raison d'etre of feminism today, without which feminism cannot exist?
Well, it certainly, I think it was the cornerstone of the feminist movement that was revived in the 1960s. The fact is that this movement was a movement to get women to abandon their roles as mothers and as wives and devote themselves to the marketplace, to pursuing careers. Well, it's crucial to that goal that women be able to have an abortion. Because if the most important thing in your life is your career, you cannot compete fully with men if you're going to become pregnant and have to take time off. And we all know that no matter how hard you work in the workplace and no matter how much help you have at home from maids and nannies, you still, the woman is always devoting more time to child care than her husband. So in order to be fully competitive, they feel that they must have the right to unrestricted abortion. And there's no question about that. What abortion, and I say in my book that to feminists, hardcore feminists, abortion is necessary to make women as much like men as possible. They really, if they have legal abortion, they feel that they can have sex as freely as men do, and they'll never have the consequences that sex has for women if they cannot have an abortion. So it's an effort to be more like men. And that's the whole point of contemporary feminism, to make women as much like men as possible.
With only 1 minute before we have to go here, Carolyn, give us an alternative to women becoming as much like men as possible.
Well, the alternative is to go back to being feminine women, if that's what you want. If you want to enjoy all the joys of motherhood, if you want a husband who's going to be faithful to you and to support you and your children so that you don't have to leave them to be raised by paid employees, then reject the feminist claim that women can only find fulfillment in work outside the home, and accept the fact that the home and motherhood and full-time motherhood can be the most glorious thing in the world. And if you accept that, and if you really believe it, I think that you will be able to find men who agree with you, and or who at least are going to be willing to work hard to support you if you're going to be a good wife and mother.
Carolyn Graglia, thank you for joining us again on this Monday on Issues, Etc.
I enjoy talking to you, always.
And I do as well, talking with you. Carolyn Graglia left a promising legal career in 1959 to care for her family. There's an alternative, folks. A good one. She's author of the book Domestic Tranquility, A Brief Against Feminism. You can purchase the book Domestic Tranquility by calling Spence Publishing at 1-888-SPENPUB. That's 1-888-SPENPUB, or visit their website, spencepublishing.com. The book is titled Domestic Tranquility. In the next hour of the program, we'll conclude our series on the Liturgy of Sickness, Death, and Dying. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest from St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. The conclusion? The commemoration of the faithful departed, All Saints. We'll talk about that, how it fits into the church's life as it deals with sickness, death, and dying. A sad day to see women's lives, ideas, minds so twisted into anger, hatred, sloganeering, no critical thinking, Women are better than this, folks. They're far better than what you saw yesterday at the March for Women's Lives. There's so much more in store for women than simply listening to the slogans and believing that their lives and their freedom and their happiness depends upon taking the life of another person, or at least being able to do it if they want to. Women are far better than that. They really are.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go.
Don't mess with women!
It is our decision, not theirs.
I hope John Ashcroft is listening. He's just over there, you know, because we are a true threat to his vision of America.
So keep the faith.
I'm Senator Barbara Boxer, and I'm pro-choice.
Keep your claws off my body! Keep your claws off my body!
Well, it's time to take women's rights off the bargaining table and put up a sign that says, not negotiable!
But this is the biggest march because we are fed up. And we are not going to take it anymore.
Que viva choice!
Viva!
This government is the greatest danger on earth.
They better put our uteruses in a lockbox and keep their hands off them!
We are here today with our daughters, with our mothers, with our husbands, with our boyfriends, with our sisters, with our lovers.
They are coming after your schools. They are coming after your neighborhood pharmacy. They are even coming after your Girl Scout cookies.
And I know one thing for sure. This is unquestioned. This is the largest march in women's rights history. And forget women's history. In history.
Know your power and use it.
This is not just a woman's issue, it's a human issue. Let's hear it for the boys!
Keep your hands off our bodies.
And here is our message. It's very simple. We are pro-choice, and we will never go back.
We are here to take back our country.
Now they need to hear you at the White House!
It is your choice, not the politicians. We reject, Mr. Bush, your hypocrisy, your greed.
Women's rights are not negotiable.
We have the power. We have the power. We have the power. We have the power.
You to help me out here. Let's tell John Ashcroft to take his long right-wing arms off our medical privacy.
Don't mess with women.